I listen basically to you guys and the guys before you, Steiny and the over-emotional one.
Now, back to Steiny and Guru on 95.7 The Game.
All right, Evan Giddings in for Daryl the Guru Johnson today. Guru, I tell you what, I'm going to tell you a little secret. I don't want to hear anything about Goo missing Thursday. Because let me tell you something. If you were sick as Goo was yesterday, you would have missed work yesterday.
I almost missed the segment.
He played hurt yesterday, my man.
Willis Reed.
And you know what? He did the best he could.
I don't like that tone.
A for effort. But... Hey, so get this.
Get off our guy.
Get this. So Here's a new one. I'm going to start this segment with a little story. It'll take about a minute.
I'm timing you.
Did I tell you that my daughters, when I was gone for a week, my daughters redid my downstairs office?
You mentioned something about that. Yeah.
It was in disrepair because water got into it when the rain, and so I stopped. It's a cool little space, but I haven't used it in 2 years. Because ants came, it was all bad.
Is that the one with the fat head on the door?
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct. Anyway, they fixed up my office. It looks great. And there's one thing left to do, and that is mount the TV. The TV we're talking about mounting, not anything else. Just get your mind out of the gutter. So.
You put it there.
So Best Buy is going to come. Best Buy or Geek Squad. I guess I should know if I'm going to rip them. But I think it's Best Buy.
Okay.
They're coming tomorrow.
Could be the Geek Squad at Best Buy.
I think that's probably what it is.
Yeah.
So anyway, guess what? They're coming tomorrow to mount my TV.
Yes, they are. When?
You know what their arrival window is?
Talk to me.
This is a new one. 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. You've got to be kidding me.
Wait a minute.
I swear to God.
So someone's got to be there? In between 7 a.m. and 7 p.m.?
The arrival window, the original arrival window, was really 2 hours. 10 to 12, 2 to 4. Then, without anybody really noticing, it became a 4-hour window. There's no doubt. It went from 8 to 12 or 12 to 4. Whoa. 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. is not a window. That is a day.
No. That's more than a day. The work day is from 9 to 5. How can you have a day? Maybe I haven't been a member of the Geek Squad, but a 12-hour work day? Are you kidding me? Can we at least whittle it down to... Is it going to be before or after noon? Seriously. What's up, Kev?
95.7 The Game. Breaking news.
Oh, my God.
J.J. Redick is the new head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. J.J. Redick is, per Woj, 4-year deal for less than Danny Hurley money.
Now they're really building a dynasty down there.
Yeah, okay. All right. Congrats to him.
I can't wait for the pod.
I like him less now than I did a couple years. Not because he got hired by the Lakers. I like him less now than I did
they're
2 years
be the
ago.
The first team or the first coach player, they're going to do a podcast live, like at halftime. I guarantee it. It's going to be the first of its kind. It's going to be incredible. It's going to be branded as, and it's going to be
possibilities.
Oh my God! It's going to be one of the reasons I hate him this season.
What if I tell you I think that's within the realm of possibility? I absolutely think it's within the realm of possibility that LeBron and Redick could do a 10-minute thing at halftime. And I'll tell you why. Because if there's one misconception about halftime in professional sports, it's not really this sacred time where the coach comes in and we got to do this and we got to get into 1-2-2 and we've got to keep our, you know, arms outstretched on defense and get into the passing. Yeah, little. But most of the time, they're just on their phones. Most of the time, they're just...
checking Twitter.
Remember when
Curry said Matty checks Barrows? Twitter at halftime? Oh, yeah, the athletic story about Shanahan at halftime.
Yeah, and he's like, the lead was, I thought it would be better, half like being in a halftime locker room, but there's like, yeah, there's nothing going on. Everybody just sits in their chairs. Some guys get retaped. Some guy, I guess McCaffrey eats like a peanut butter, he eats something.
Yeah, you got to get some calories in you.
I think there's plenty of room for a podcast.
But there's not like a win-win for the Gipper speech at halftime in a football team because there's 54 people on the roster. I do think there might be more. Like, the one thing I am curious to learn about J.J. Redick is because at Duke, and even as a player, he was kind of like a little bit of an MF-er. Like, he had an edge to him.
He was a poor man's Christian Laettner.
That's not bad.
Laettner was hated.
People hated J.J. Redick.
Yeah,
and I feel like the way he kind of talks about old times, he also hated a lot of these people, too. But so maybe he brings some edge to the sidelines or, I guess, the locker room. But just the optics of it, the optics, Steiny. I don't like thinking about LeBron literally being a co-host with his head coach.
Let's get the official word from the Laker fan in our group, Joe Spadoni.
Joe Spadoni,
how do you feel about the Lakers hiring J.J. Redick? We all know Spadoni loves the Lakers.
Why not?
All righty.
And there is your...
Hey, you know what? I get a sense.
Our Lakers insider.
That gives me a sense of how people feel about it. A couple things NBA related that I was thinking about. And I don't know how far we're going to get into it. I just have it written down. Monty Williams got fired, and I can't stop thinking about the San Francisco Giants.
Okay.
Do you have any idea what the connection might be?
Was Willie Mays his favorite player?
No.
Okay.
Monty Williams got the largest contract of any coach in basketball history last year. What was it? 6 years, $78 million.
Yeah, until like two people passed him.
Yes, exactly. So after 1 year into a six-year contract, he's been fired. So why did he get fired? Well, here's what happened. The Detroit Pistons fired Troy Weaver, their general manager. Then they brought in candidates, and they ended up hiring Trajan Langdon, who went to Duke also. Trajan. Mm-hmm. And no self-respecting general manager is ever going to accept a job. I shouldn't say ever, but most will not accept a job if they don't have control of the head coach or the manager. So clearly, Trajan Langdon became the GM and was like, I'm not the GM if I can't hire my coach. Boom. Monty Williams is gone, even though he's owed $65 million. Okay.
Missed out on Redick.
Now let's go to the San Francisco Giants.
Okay.
If the Giants don't make the playoffs this year, I think we could all agree Farhan Zaidi may be in a little trouble.
He will be in trouble.
Okay,
I don't know if he'll lose his job, but
okay.
But if he's going to be hot.
But this is a long way to get to. Bob Melvin's in trouble. Like, Bob Melvin's in trouble. If he doesn't make, if the Giants don't make the playoffs this year, and Farhan Zaidi gets fired, Melvin's gone. He's gone. Because the new GM is not going to be like, I want to be your guys' GM, and, oh, I'm okay with Bob Melvin. It's like it's the very first fundamental hire that a GM makes, the coach or the manager. They've got to be able to make it. Now, Farhan.
I was going to say, the current regime didn't do that.
Right. They let Bochy manage one more year. So maybe, but Bochy had three rings.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, like, Bob Melvin's obviously not as accomplished as Bruce Bochy is, especially with the San Francisco Giants. But I could also argue that the reason Farhan still has a job is partially because he didn't make the immediate choice to move off of Bruce Bochy. So I think it was actually kind of a strategic choice of, well, if we come in and, you know, at the time he was taking over a farm system and it stunk, right, and it was, you know, kind of eroding the entire Giants organization. They were over the hill as far as competing for championships, but they're trying to figure out how to, you know, age gracefully, right? Okay, so you give him a year. You know, you kind of get a mulligan your first year. I don't know who this Pistons GM is or what his track record is, but the moment that you make the move for a new coach, especially 1 year into, what, a six-year deal of Monty Williams?
Yeah.
Worth $80-ish million?
Yeah.
Owner's still forking out that money. That's guaranteed. That's out of his pocket. He can't do anything about that. The moment you move off the head coach that you have a large investment in, well, that new head coach better help you win soon. Otherwise, so, like, the moment you make the choice to move into a new manager or head coach, your clock begins to tick. I think the clock ticks longer in baseball because it takes longer to build up your system than it does in basketball. But I would almost, I mean, I don't know if Monty Williams wanted to stick around, but I almost feel like it's kind of dumb to move it to a head coach that no one knows anything about.
Well, I think as it related to Monty Williams, apparently he was going to have to interview for again, and he probably was like, hit the pike, I'm not interviewing. Why would I interview? I have the job. You know what I'm saying? But let's get back to Melvin, because is this kind of what you're saying?
Unless there's somebody you can envision doing a better job than him next season,
so let's,
then you should keep.
Give me a GM, any GM.
Dave Dombrowski.
Who's not working right now?
He's the GM of the Phillies.
Okay.
Or president of baseball.
Epstein's not working, right?
Yeah, he works in the commissioner's office.
Oh, God.
He works for Major League
Let's
baseball.
Say there's a great GM out there who's the best GM that's unemployed.
That's unemployed?
Yeah.
I think all the best ones are employed.
Okay, Jimmy Smith.
Sure.
There's a guy named Jimmy Smith.
Brian Cashman might get fired. I mean, my God.
So Jimmy Smith, the GM, Farhan gets fired and Jimmy Smith comes in. What you're saying is Jimmy Smith might say, you know what, Larry Bear and Giants ownership, I'm just going to kind of take this year to evaluate. I'm not going to do anything with Melvin. Just going to get a lay of the land, watch this team, see who I like, see who I don't like. So by doing that, you're saying, okay, the clock's not even ticking on that guy yet.
I don't think so. I don't think there's enough of a reason right now for me to believe that Bob Melvin is a bigger problem than Farhan Zaidi.
I agree with that. I agree with that.
So if you come in and you move off of a manager, which is completely within your right.
Right.
Like, Bob Melvin still might be a good manager. And then you just told him to kick rocks.
The interesting thing to me is maybe that has something to do with the quality of candidates. So remember when Kenny Atkinson was rumored to get the Charlotte job?
Yeah.
Okay, so I heard two things about that. One is...
sources say.
One is the reason he didn't take the job was because his family was entrenched out here at that point, and he didn't want to maybe move his family, or he didn't want to move back. That's fine. Do I believe it? Yeah. But I also heard that one of the reasons he may have turned it down along with others is because they were mandating that the new coach of the Hornets keep some of the assistant coaches around whose contracts were not up.
Okay.
So the other thing that's a part of this is, are you going to get the best like coaching candidates if you got to hold on to assistant coaches that you might not want? Are you going to get the best GM candidates if you know, the Giants were to say, well, boy, we just hired Melvin. Give him another year at least. Maybe a great GM's like, yeah, that's not how I work.
I think that's fair. Look, I think anybody who comes in here is, like, the Giants need a shakeup no matter what. Like, I did look at Bob Melvin as a shakeup compared to his predecessor, because I think that Kapler and Melvin are diametrically opposed as baseball people. But if you're the new president of baseball operations and you come in and you're trying to essentially rebuild this thing
right
from the ground up, you have to determine which players you want to keep, but staff and personnel, maybe you do just want a clean house. And But I don't look. I'm looking at this team right now, and a lot of it is because of how banged up they are. This team isn't very good. Like, these players are not great. You know, so I personally can't blame Melvin for not being able to extract 90 wins out of a 80-win team.
Right.
I don't know how many people across baseball can do that.
I was thinking, I mean, honestly, if I were hired as the GM of the San Francisco Giants and Kapler was the manager, I would have fired him right away. That would have been my first order of business. Kapler, see you later. Now, Bob Melvin, I've just gotten hired to be the Giants GM this offseason. He is so much more of a, you know what? He's not going to hurt us for a year. You know what I mean? Or
I would have a conversation with him. I don't think I'd have a conversation with Kapler.
Exactly. I think
I've seen enough.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Melvin's a guy you could at least talk to, and I don't know if I'd ask him to interview again for the managerial position, but I probably would at least say, hey, Bob, you know, what are you thinking? Like, do you want to be a part of this? I think someone like Melvin is looking for stability. I think that's why he came to this position, because he didn't have it in San Diego. It's actually kind of funny. If you ask him anything about last season.
Yeah, what'd you do?
He didn't talk about it fondly. In fact, he's not chipper whatsoever. He's a little defensive because, in his mind, San Diego, it feels like, was just like that place was not for him. That's not how he likes to manage.
Now you hate to see it.
You really do.
You really hate to see it.
I mean, he's no J.J. Redick, but
J.J. Redick, the new head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers, and Joe Spadoni, our resident Lakers fan, said, why not?
Actually, you know, this
That's
is good.
Great. It's classic.
This is good. Means a brand new ABC crew.
That's what you call a silver lining.
We all
ladies
win.
And gentlemen. What are they going to do?
What? Oh, the ESPN broadcast?
Oh, my God.
Well, Jeff Van Gundy is scooped up.
I know.
Dude, L.A. got some big boys this offseason.
Spadone, were you here when I said congratulations to Jeff Van Gundy becoming the next head coach of the L.A. Clippers? He's going to be.
No, he's
not. If you don't think he's going to be the head coach in the next 4 months, please.
We can bet on that.
Tyronn Lue's better than him as a coach.
No, he's not. No,
when was the last time Jeff Van Gundy was a head coach?
A long time ago. He's like, you know what this is going to be like? Hubie Brown. Van Gundy's going to do to the Clippers what Hubie Brown did to the Memphis Grizzlies.
Hubie Brown should be on the lead, taking J.J. Redick's job.
You know,
honestly,
if he can hold on another season, he should be the man.
Dude.
I'm serious.
Hubie's like 90.
He's like the anti-John Sterling. He's still nailing everything in terms of broadcasting.
No, but the issue is that I don't think Hubie could work with a three-person booth. It's all about Hubie. I mean, you got to feature your best player. And even at advanced age, you know, speaking we're later on today, there's a Rick Woodfield game in honor of the Negro Leagues. One of the greatest pitchers ever come through there is Satchel Paige, who pitched until like he was age 50. Hubie Brown is like the Satchel Paige of broadcasters right now. I mean, this guy's still got his fastball and is throwing thousands of complete games.
God, where was I a couple days ago where they were talking about Satchel Paige? And you probably know a lot about him.
He threw over 50 no-hitters.
Did it?
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, they were playing with a ball of yarn, essentially. I mean, you couldn't hit that thing out of the infield.
No, but there was the story that I think Mays told a lot of people who retold it yesterday, that one of his at-bats against Satchel Paige, I don't know if it was his first one or not, but Willie goes down. Oh, Willie got a hit off of Satchel Paige in his first at-bat. He got on board against him. Satchel didn't like that. So next at-bat, he comes up and he gets him 0-2 or two strikes. And as Satchel Paige is throwing the third pitch, he tells him, basically, sit down. Like, in mid-pitch, Willie Mays swings right through it, strikes out. Like,
was it a postseason game?
Could have been. That's a shot. That's a low blow. But it was those kind of things. Like, I also read, like, Satchel Paige was somebody who could move players. Like, they always talk about Bob Gibson. Like, he would tell a third baseman exactly where to play. Ball's coming to you. Like, Satchel Paige would do that on the mound as well. Willie Mays had the ability to do that in center field, to move outfielders where he wanted them. Like, the manager, outfield wasn't his domain.
Right.
That was Willie Mays. Willie Mays put people exactly where he wanted to because he knew enough about the hitter, the trends, all of that. So another part of his game, too, which probably gets overlooked, is just how intelligent and smart he was, not just how athletically gifted.
You looking forward to that game?
I am.
Tonight?
I am.
What's the one thing, and people want to talk about the Rickwood Field game, we can do that. What are you going to be looking for? Like, why? I guess what I'm saying is, if, let's just say hypothetically, this game were in St. Louis, and you were like, yeah, I'm not going to watch that game. What? Like, why are you watching tonight?
I'm watching tonight at Rickwood Field in Birmingham, Alabama, because I think it's an opportunity to learn. I think it's an opportunity. It's an opportunity to educate ourselves on things that don't often come into our sphere. Like, there's so many different distractions and things and, you know, places to put our attention. And I mean, I love history, so that's right. One part of it too, but it's also a part of history that's often overlooked. Like, people don't talk about the Negro Leagues. And one of the reasons why I think the inclusion of statistics this year was, in one breath, a good thing, and you want them to be equal. In another breath, it's complex, because I've also read that a lot of people didn't like it because the whole point of the Negro Leagues was because they weren't included,
right?
Because they weren't equal. Yeah, yeah. So combining these statistics in a way takes attention away from what the Negro Leagues were and the foundation, the origin of it in the first place,
right?
Which was because of racism, was because of segregation, because of them not being allowed to be included in the white man's game. And so a lot of these things, to me, are just different reasons why to, number one, pay attention to the game or the field itself. Like, the game is relatively meaningless to me, but the opportunity to educate myself about Rickwood Field, about Birmingham, Alabama, which of course plays a massive role in the foundation and fabric of our country, and the fact that this is, number one, the longest standing professional stadium in the country. It was founded in 1910. This stadium has seen multiple wars. It has been through a Great Depression, a great inflation, a great recession, and has still stood the test of time. You know, there's a lot of things about it that are great as far as the players that have come through there. Willie Mays, obviously, being one of the greats. But it's also one of the very few places in which integration was allowed in a specific place in the Deep South before integration was possible. Like, whites and blacks were allowed to sit together and watch particular baseball games. That didn't happen all the time, but that was a rarity. You know, there were some good things that happened there. There were also some bad things that happened there. Do you know who I think the first prominent play-by-play broadcaster was at Rickwood Field? It was Bull Connor.
Okay.
Bull Connor is, of course, infamous during a lot of the boycotts and, you know, the whole civil rights movement, because he was the guy that unleashed dogs. He was the guy that turned fire hoses on black people.
Right.
He created a voice for himself through Rickwood Field. So there's a lot of, I think, intricacies and pieces about the history of our country that run through that place, not just with baseball, but also with everything really that we know about the 1940s and 50s. So it is a symbolic place that I hope tonight brings people to just a place of understanding, or I don't know, just a willingness to learn more about what happened. Because until you understand the past, to me, we're always going to be, I don't know, just a little stuck and not be able to do the most with our future.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to just, one, I want to see how the stadium looks.
That's been redone.
What it looks like. I'm sure it has the a classic old-time feel. Or, you know, it's got to be like, remember Conseco Fieldhouse in the Pacers arena that was new about 15 years ago? It was an ode to old Indiana basketball. Like, the scoreboard was those little lights.
Mm-hmm.
And in the lobby, they would have all the games, but it was like a train station. You ever see those numbers flip? I'll explain it to you on the other side. All right, 888-957-9570. I see Connor in San Leandro. He's got a question about Rickwood. And you know what? I just happen to be working with somebody who knows a lot about it. And that's my guy, Evan Giddings, today. So he'll answer a question about Rickwood. All right. That's about it for this segment. And I don't have a read, so we'll be back on 95.7 The Game.